It's Friday morning, and this is Nadine at 9, where curiosity meets conversation and nonsense gets called out. I'm your host, Nadine. Let's get talking. Good morning. Welcome to a live Nadine at 9. I am in the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Arts studio on DAM Radio. Thank you for joining me today. It is Good Friday, and my son asked me yesterday what Good Friday was, and I said, you know, it's when we recognize that Jesus was crucified, and he said, well, why do you call it good then? Which is probably a question that all of us have had at one point in our lives, but ultimately, it's because we know the ending, right? We know that even though our Savior was brutally murdered, he rose again 3 days later, and he now lives, and that is the God that we serve. So we call it good because it is good. It's good for those of us who have repented and accepted Jesus Christ as our Savior, and it is good waiting for those to do the same. So I'm going to have a guest join me in just a little bit. But before that, I did want to take a few minutes to just kind of reflect on the day, Good Friday, and just kind of the week in general with it being Holy Week. You know, I realized this year specifically that we recognize Palm Sunday because we would be at church and, you know, they would do Palm Sunday. But really, none of the other days of the week were meaningful. And I hate to say it like that, but it's the truth. You know, I just didn't really put any thought into them. And I don't remember people really talking about them, like in the Christian circles that I was in. Until, of course, then there was Easter, which honestly, a lot of times Easter felt more like the commercial holiday than it did anything else. And so this year I had decided to go on my sugar fast that I try to do once a year, but I had decided to do it actually during Lent this year. And it was very interesting because I realized that as I was going through the Lent season, which is almost done now, that started on Ash Wednesday, I felt almost like, and honestly, I mean, this was not intentional. I was just giving up sugar more so for like health type reasons, just to kind of recenter and get back to not eating quite as much sugar in, since it's in everything that we consume almost nowadays. Anyway, so, but it was really interesting because I felt like as the days went on that my heart was being prepared for Holy Week and Easter in a way that I had never experienced before. And so I really kind of started digging in a little bit more to Lent and Holy Week and just kind of spending some more time pondering those things, I guess. And honestly, wondering why it seems like as a whole, in my experience, the Christian church doesn't seem to do that much for it, which is just odd. You know, it's this week that is everything. I mean, it's literally everything for our faith. We base everything off of this week, off of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so it just seems to me like maybe there should be a little bit more done for it. But even if not as a whole, obviously we can do that individually. And so that's kind of what I've been doing personally and, you know, my family as well. Just really trying to get more into a mindset of the reality of the crucifixion, because it's very easy for me, and maybe for you, but very easy for me to just kind of fall into, it's a story that we read about a lot, and it kind of stops there sometimes. So I started digging in more to just the traditions of these things, because, you know, ultimately it's your heart, right? It's not the things that you do on the outside that saves you. It is ultimately your heart. And if it is repentive, if you have repented and accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior, you are saved. We know that. But I do think that there are disciplines and structures and traditions that we have that can help us draw nearer to the cross. Again, when your heart is in the right posture. So I've honestly, I didn't really know anything about Ash Wednesday until I moved to the lake, which I don't know if that's just because where I grew up, there wasn't a really strong or prominent Catholic community. I have no idea. But I remember I was waitressing and I saw a woman come in and she had this kind of, you know, like a dark smudge on her forehead. And I mean, being the nice person that I am, I didn't want her walking around with that on her forehead. And so I went up to her and I was like, excuse me, but you have a little bit of something on your forehead. And she was so, so kind. I mean, I still remember exactly how she responded. And she just said, oh, you know, it's Ash Wednesday. And I, you know, like that's supposed to mean something to me, I guess. Again, very naive about this. And so I just said, oh, okay. You know, I guess it's supposed to be there. Well, then I started the restaurant I worked at. We would do a fish special on Fridays and there would be lots of people come in for it. And around town, there were all these notices about fish fries. And I just thought that was so interesting. And all of these years, for over 10 years, I haven't really ever dug into why there's fish fries or what Ash Wednesday is or any of these things. And so I did start doing that a little bit this week. And I just realized a lot of super interesting things about Easter and Ash Wednesday and Lent. And maybe you all know this, but it was new to me. And so I'm going to share some of what I learned with you because, again, I love history and I think it's super interesting. So obviously, you know, the resurrection happened before we say, like, we coined the term Easter, right? So it was at the Council of Nicaea in AD 325 when Constantine had gathered about, you know, around 300 bishops together to discuss some things. And one of which was the Arianism, which, you know, Arius had argued that Jesus was a created being rather than being co-eternal with God. And this was this was obviously like a huge issue because that's not what scripture teaches us. And so there was this Council of Nicaea that gathered together to address that, but then also to address when to celebrate Easter, the resurrection, because it had been celebrated with the Passover. And so anyway, they had gathered together to establish some of these things. And so that was decided in AD 325 that they would celebrate it on the, let me get this right, on the first full moon, I'm sorry, on the first Sunday after the first full moon of the spring equinox. And as we know now, sometimes the equinox can vary by a day or two, which, you know, doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But when you add up thousands of years, it is a big deal. And so it would make Easter fluctuate, basically. It wasn't on the same day that they had originally thought it was going to be on in years to come. So then in, I didn't write the year down. It was Pope Gregory. Sorry, I had the date and now I believe it was in the 1500s. Sorry if that's way off, but I think that's what it is. Oh, no, I'm sorry. In AD 601, I was way off. I apologize. So in AD 601, Pope Gregory moved the start of Lent 46 days before Easter and established Ash Wednesday. And so basically what they decided at that time was that they were going to say that March 21st was basically just like the forever spring equinox, right? Like that was when they were going to measure the full moon by. And so on March 21st, like now, this is how you can know when Easter is going to be. On March 21st, the first Sunday after the first full moon of March 21st is when Easter is going to be. That's what my researching has shown. If you know something different than me, absolutely, you can write me and tell me. I never want to give out false information, but that's what it showed to me. So anyway, I just thought that was really interesting because I've always wondered, you know, Easter fluctuates so much. And so that was really cool to find that out. And then the Ash Wednesday, obviously, you know, it started by Pope Gregory. And the tradition, you know, of putting the ash on the forehead, which I guess traditionally, again, it is the burning of the palms from the year prior. The ash from the burning of the palms is what traditionally they would use to put a cross on their forehead. And that was to symbolize, you know, the ash is very biblical in different times through scripture, mostly specifically like with mourning. And that was how it came to be with Ash Wednesday. So I've never recognized Ash Wednesday as, you know, like I would say probably a Catholic person would, but, and I, same with Lent. However, I just think that there are, again, like I said, there are these traditions that are in place that if your heart is in the right posture, I think they can be excellent, excellent tools for drawing us nearer to the cross and preparing us for Holy Week. And, you know, one of the things that really hit me this morning as I was praying and just kind of thinking on Good Friday and what it was and, you know, how it would have felt to, you know, especially be a disciple, a follower of Jesus, someone who just loved him dearly. You know, obviously, I mean, they were just in agony. And then I was thinking about what it would have been like on that evening when he's dead and your Messiah is dead and in this tomb, and it just this overwhelming feeling of how different and horrible it would be if he hadn't resurrected. And I've never really thought about that before. I guess to that depth of, you know, what if all of the prophecies had all been, I mean, what if the plan had always been that he wouldn't have risen, that he would still be dead? And I just, it struck me so deeply that how different our faith would be, because Jesus would still be in the tomb. And so then the flip side of that, again, struck me of just how amazing it is that he's not dead. He is alive, and we get to celebrate that every single day of the year. And I just think that especially this week, you know, obviously this day, there's sorrow. And I think that there should be, I mean, there should be this time of just kind of understanding the grief and the magnitude of Jesus' death on the cross, but we do not stay there, right? I mean, he's risen, he's alive, and that's the God that we get to serve. He's absolutely alive, and one day we will get to see him again. All right. That was just my little reflection on Good Friday. I hope that this weekend can have some reflection of your own and just, yeah, bask in that sunshine of Jesus Christ. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Happy Good Friday.
Yes, yes, it is Good Friday. It's kind of hitting me different this year, which I enjoy, but, you know, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or the world's getting grosser.
Right.
But yep. Somehow it's hitting me different, and I'm enjoying it. So I had not introduced you yet. Jen Olson is running for... Oh my word, I just blanked on it's
director
the
of elections.
Yes, director. I had county in my head and I was like, that doesn't work. Yes, the director of elections. And I'll just let you take it away if you want to give a little bit of your background, who you are, and, you know, where you grew up, what your childhood was like, and maybe into some of your current interests and family life and things like that.
Okay. Yes, I'm Jen Olson. I'm running for St. Charles County Director of Elections, which is kind of like a county clerk in smaller counties, except when you get to larger counties, if a county clerk was in charge of elections as well as everything else, they would need like six of them. So we split it up in the larger counties. So the Director of Elections is just in charge of everything election related. And as far as my background goes, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I have two children, one is 8, one is almost 20. I grew up here in Wentzville, Missouri, went to Wentzville School District when it was still, I say it was a one-horse town compared to what it is now. It's a thriving metropolis, it feels like.
It is, yes.
And spent some of my early adult life on the East Coast in Virginia Beach, working for two different government contractors, some in communications and then some in defense products. And my basic duties were accounting and bookkeeping, office management type stuff. And then moved to Wisconsin for a couple years when I met my husband. And then moved back here in 2014, August in 2014. So been here ever since. I love it. It's bittersweet because, you know, I remember the St. Charles County I grew up in, the Wentzville I grew up in, which was small and quaint and everybody knew everybody. And now it's just kind of turning into a city, which has its ups and downs. I love that Walmart is less than 5 minutes away from me right now, because growing up, you had to drive to Troy to go to the Super Walmart. So, my career has basically been in data analysis, accounting, I've always kind of gravitated towards numbers and you know, in an accounting world, you're always looking for that one penny. So it takes a lot of attention to detail, that sort of thing. I got involved in elections when, I guess it was probably around 2020. We all just saw some funky stuff going on, you know, around the country, and it irked everybody's interest, as far as I could tell. Got involved at the local level. Also got involved in school boards because my son was an eighth grader, and he missed half of his eighth grade year due to COVID. He didn't miss it, but he basically missed it. He stayed at home and he did that. So he entered high school without even really finishing eighth grade in school. So it was a weird transition for him. So I got involved in the school board stuff to get our kids back in school. We ended up starting a parents organization and sued the county health department to stop quarantining our kids because there was over, I think it was like 360,000 missed school days for students in St. Charles County combined.
Wow.
So that's how many students, not how many students, but that's how many school days all of our students missed because of quarantines. And a couple days after we sued them, they actually ended up ceasing all quarantining. So that was a plus. We call that a win.
Yeah.
And then I ended up running for school board. I have been on the school board now since 2024. No, I'm sorry, 2023.
Awesome.
And my last day, I believe, is April, whatever the next, not this coming Tuesday, but the Tuesday after that is my last day on the school board.
Okay.
Because I decided I want to do something that I can probably be more impactful in, which taking us to hand counting paper ballots, I think would be massive.
So your term just is up, then you're just not seeking for re-election, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How has it been on the school board there? Have you seen, I mean, you know, because obviously being close to St. Louis, I would think that maybe you guys get a little bit more of the difficult things than maybe we do in the rural areas. So what's it been like?
So I'll be completely honest with you. I don't think it matters how far away from any city that you are.
For sure.
I think school districts are pretty much captured across the country.
For sure.
I've experienced a lot of, I guess I would call it the education industrial complex, where it seems as though, and I'm not saying it's the administration or it's the teachers, I'm saying it's the entire system wrapped up with a pretty little bow.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer focuses on the student. It focuses on the how much money can be made from and every vendor that we use. You know, it's kind of like a universal vendor system where you're using the same vendors everybody else uses, and the curriculum comes from the same vendor that everybody else uses, the curriculum resources, and they're making cash, you know, hand over fist on school districts. It's a cash cow. And no matter how far away from the cities you get, you are probably not represented properly on your school boards because the NEA, which is the National Education Association, I believe that's what that stands for, they have effectively taken over the school boards. In our state back in 2024, I believe, they won their candidates, NEA endorsed candidates, won almost every single school board race statewide.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that's insane. That is insane because in 2024, people elected Donald Trump, who ran on defunding the Department of Education and breaking up the NEA and their stronghold on school districts. But then in 2025, again, in April, we elected all NEA candidates. So it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why you think that happened?
Because there's no party affiliation in April. People don't know who they're voting for. And a lot, you will find in a red state like Missouri, people will hide behind a nonpartisan election because they don't want to disclose their party affiliation. And, they've got two options when they're asked. Because the number one question when I was campaigning for all 3 years, because I campaigned during my campaign and the two after mine, because I was trying to get more conservatives on the school board. The first question and the most asked question was, what party are you? People want to know what party school board candidates are. Because your ideology, your values, especially nowadays, you can find who you align with by knowing what party affiliation they are. Because for me, in today's day and age, I do not want to vote for a Democrat to be on my school board. And I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way. And it's basically because of the ideological stronghold that I would say the left currently has in our school system nationwide.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you serving for these years on the school board, and I'm sure that the district there, whether they realize it or not, they're very grateful.
I appreciate that.
I know it can be a very thankless job, but I am very grateful for people like you who are willing to do that. So would you like to see the school board election moved to basically like the same time as the primaries?
Actually, yes. And there were a couple bills in session this year, both in the Senate and in the House. I helped Nick Schroer, and I think one other person, I'm not sure who it was last year, with some language for a couple of their bills that they had pertaining to moving the school board elections. And my biggest thing was, in St. Charles County, our school boards, Winksville, Francis, Howland, Fort Zumwalt, the big three, we make up over 80%, well, it's around 80% of the county. And our constituency is far bigger than even like the county councilmen who are on the August ballot. There's seven county council districts, but there's only five districts, and really there's only the three big ones make up most of it. So where they have to hit, 2,500 homes, we have to hit 40,000. Well, I guess county council actually has to hit more than 25, but like the city councilmen and the mayor and all of the people that are on the April ballot, they're anywhere from 500 to 2,000 homes that they have to target. And for school board, we have to hit 40,000, and you have 6 weeks to do it. So it's almost impossible to reach your electorate unless you're just, you're the NEA and you have all this money to fund into mailers and ads and billboards and all of that stuff.
That's so true. Yeah, I would. I mean, and also, I think it would be great to move those elections, especially because there's not even a great turnout usually for the primaries, but there's even less of one for the municipal elections when it's like, this is the one that's directly impacting your life. I mean, the one that's like day in, day out, these are the people that are directly impacting you. And
Shaping your children
yes, exactly.
and the children in your community, even if you don't have kids.
And that's, that's always been my big thing too. Well, I shouldn't say always. I mean, it's something that I kind of realized in the past few years was, people that say they don't have kids or their kids are grown or they're homeschooling, because I homeschool, but it's like I have a very vested interest in what's going on with our school board because those are my child's peers. And those are the kids that are going to grow up to potentially run our country and all other kinds of things. It's like everyone should care about what's going on in the schools.
And like you said, in April, there's about, I think, on a good year, it's 15% turnout. August, you're about 40%. And if you move it to November, if it's an election, presidential election year, we're anywhere from 65 to 75% turnout. So you're actually going to get the voice of the people.
Well, we'll just keep hoping and trying to get some legislators to get that pushed forward, and Maybe some year we'll see it happen.
I do know that Senate Bill, I think it's Adam Schnellting's Senate Bill 1002, I believe that is what it is, did make it out of the Senate yesterday. So it's on the House to, if they can pass it this year, that'd be great. You know, they've got about a month and a couple weeks to do that. Hopefully they can. But I guess it only affects St. Charles County. So, you know, if we want it, I don't see why they wouldn't give it to us.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit. Let's move into the Director of Elections. So currently, who is the Director of Elections?
Kurt Barr.
Okay. So let's talk about him as much as you're comfortable with, because I know little bits and pieces. I don't know a lot, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't know much about him. So just go ahead and share what you would like for people to know.
So he was elected 8 years ago, I guess after he came out of the House, and then he ran unopposed 4 years later. So he hasn't had an opponent in 8 years. Mm-hmm. So I will be his first time trying to get reelected with an opponent. He has, in my opinion, you know, I don't think he's a bad person. I think that he is just not suited for this position because he does not listen to the people. Mm. And the people have been begging him for, you know, at least as long as I've been involved, so 6 years, for more transparency and to be more responsive to us. So, for example, and this goes back to 2020 with all the funny business going on around the country. I believe Mike Lindell offered to purchase one of our machines here. We use Unison, OpenElect. We use Unison machines, tabulators, to count our votes. And Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, he came in and met with Kurt Barr and said, hey, we want to buy one of your machines. We will give you the money for a brand spanking new one. We won't even touch it. You can order it straight from your manufacturer, whatever. We just want to buy one of these machines so that we can figure out if there's anything going on. We can do a, you know, we could tear it apart, figure out, you know, what's going on the inside.
Yeah.
He initially agreed to it, I believe, and then ended up going back and being like, nope, I don't want to do this. No real explanation for why he didn't want to do it. I think one of the things he did say was that he didn't want the vendor to get angry with him. So, you know, good thing we are putting the vendor above our voters.
Yeah. I mean, if there's something wrong with the machine, then your vendor needs to be in hot water.
Yep. 100%. So then fast forward to, I believe it was 2024. During early voting, we want it because during the early voting process, you go into our election authority and you place your cast ballot, your voted ballot that looks the exact same way on election day into the exact same tabulators we use on election day, and it tallies your vote. So in my opinion, the vote is being tallied. And in the law, it says that challengers and watchers are allowed to be present during the counting of the votes. And you know, they're being counted on prior to election day. They're just not being reported prior to election day. So as a challenger, I submitted a challenge to the election authority and the secretary of state saying we were not allowed to go in during early voting. And Kurt said that the reason he didn't want us to be there was because he wasn't required to allow us to be there. That was like that. That was his answer, even though we had surrounding counties that were allowing challengers and watchers during their early voting process. So basically, about 40% of our ballots and votes were cast during early voting without any partisan oversight from challengers and watchers, which is what we're allowed to do by law on election day. So I for that to be his only reason, it really just it rubs me the wrong way. It's not fair to the voter. That's not transparent. That's, in my opinion, childish, and throwing around his power, basically.
Right.
He can stop us from doing something just because he feels like it, and that's not the kind of government I want.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not, yeah.
So is the St. Charles County Director of Elections, is that something that's in state statute? Or, I mean, obviously it's probably there somewhere, but then where does all of his kind of job description come from? Is that the state or the county?
So it is laid out in statute. I'm trying to find which statute it is that tells us who. All election authority statutes are 115, 023, 043, and 015. And that basically says, you know, what the authorities are. And I guess different authorities would be like an election board, a county clerk, or a director of elections in a county like St. Charles. The duties, I guess, are prescribed in those statutes, but they're also prescribed in our county charter, which basically says it's very short and sweet. It's basically like you run all the election related stuff. So you have all authority over elections as given to you in the law.
Right.
The county doesn't really limit anything as far as what you're in charge of. And that's St. Charles County's model. I'm not sure about any other county's model. That's ours.
So do you think that there needs to be some more specific responsibilities laid out in your charter?
No, because I believe that would restrict and almost create a level of bureaucracy.
Okay.
And meddling between different departments. I think the county election authority should have all powers and duties as prescribed by law and uninfringed. So we don't want the county executive to be able to dampen what they're doing. We don't want the county council to be able to dampen what they're doing. But in the same respect, we want them to do what they are supposed to do by law, mm-hmm. as well as provide as much transparency as is lawfully allowed. So going back to like the challengers and watchers, Kurt could have let us go in to the county election authority during early voting to let us be challengers and watchers, but he refused.
Right. And he absolutely had the quote unquote authority to do that because there's nowhere saying that he can't. Right.
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I kind of like it. You know, I think so often people jump to, you know, we need to regulate these things so that way if there's someone bad in power, they don't do the wrong thing. But I personally, you know, like in your situation, the people need to decide. So it's like this job is laid out just pretty basically of this is what you're supposed to take care of. And if the people don't like the way that the person's doing it, then they put someone else in there. You know, you don't need the government, in my opinion, to step in and regulate every single thing that a person can or can't do. There should be the will of the people should speak louder than that, in my opinion. So I hope that that's what happens in your case, that, you know, people are fed up with what the current seat holder is doing, so they get someone new in there.
Yep. And I have noticed, you know, because I've been campaigning a little bit. I don't want to take too much attention away from the school board elections coming up this Tuesday, but I've been campaigning a little bit, and during this very short-lived campaign so far, the number one thing that I'm hearing from voters before I even get into the rest of my platform, like when I tell them I'm running on hand-counted paper ballots, they're just like, I'm behind you 100%.
Nice.
Let's do this. We've needed this for so long now. Thank you for doing this. Like this is something that they believe in. And it makes them also feel as though they're going to have more control over their own elections, which is how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shouldn't be outsourcing all of our election department budget to foreign countries, to out-of-state entities for software and, you know, programming and all of this other for the actual machines that we use. We should keep that money right here in St. Charles County. And by, you know, replacing all of these tabulators and machines with humans from St. Charles County, we're putting that money back into them, to our citizens. They're getting paid to work the elections, and they'll also be in charge of them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a win for everybody.
Yeah, Last year, I believe there was a ballot hand counting demonstration at the Capitol that my husband and I went to. And, you know, there's this stigma with it. I think for a lot of people that it's this huge process and it takes forever. And it's so much more streamlined with the computers and the tabulators and all that stuff. But it was very simple to do the hand counting, and I definitely could see how it would be much, much harder to cheat if you're doing the hand counting, because there's multiple people that would have to cheat along with you, right? It's not
correct.
Just...
You'd have to convince two Republicans and two Democrats to go along with your cheat, to agree with each other and go along with the cheat. And not only that, you're still counting in batches of 50. So they can be audited. So if they don't match, you know, then they get recounted. So even for like the human error aspect of it. But as far as like the time that it counts or the time that it takes to count, a team of four could count a general election ballot, 50 of them, in an hour.
Right.
You know, undistracted, just going, doing their thing.
Yeah.
Most of our precincts during, you know, like an April election, you'll have precincts that only have a couple hundred ballots, like 200. And then there's other ones that have like 1400. So it's completely feasible to have, you know, counting teams at the polling location on election day, counting the ballots as the day goes on, because you can start up to an hour or as soon as an hour after the polls open.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, 40% of our votes are already cast in advance. So I'll also have a team of people at the election authority counting all the early ballots on election day. So,
okay. So talk about that
problem
for a second, with the early ballots. So then if your county did switch to hand counting and, you know, you got rid of all of the tabulators, so any early ballots that were cast would just basically be kept in an envelope somewhere until the day of the election?
Yes, they would be kept in there. It would be like the in-person absentee voting used to be. Well, actually, I don't know how it used to be here in St. Charles County in person. I do know that when you did an absentee by mail, you had an outer envelope and then you had an inner envelope that had no distinguishing marks on it as to who you were. So somebody would, you know, you'd mail it in and then your inner envelope, they would keep it in that envelope until it was time to open them on election day. And then they would count them on election day. And that's how I would keep it. There would be no tabulators at the election authority during early voting. You could still come in and cast your ballot, but you would put it in an envelope and then, you know, turn it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at which point on election day, we would open all the envelopes, stack the ballots on a table, and we would begin counting them an hour after the polls open.
Okay.
And I think that we could get them all done that day.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, even if you don't get it done that day, I highly doubt it would take weeks.
No. Only in Georgia does it take weeks. Georgia and Arizona.
Yeah.
And they didn't even hand count them. They were putting them through tabulators.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't even understand what took that long.
I know. It's so ridiculous. So you were saying that it does sound like, at least in your county, that quite a few people are wanting to move back to hand counting.
Yes.
Are you getting pushback on that from others?
It's rare. I do notice that the pushback... It's mostly just that it's going to take forever.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that people say is that, why are you fixing something that wasn't broken? I wholeheartedly disagree with that statement. I think
me
it is
too.
Very broken. So basically, I just try and explain, because some people, they just hear hand counted paper ballots and they're like, this lady's crazy.
Right.
So I just try to explain the entire process. And most of the time they're like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, no, I don't want my votes being tabulated on foreign-owned machinery that we can't even inspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not even the voter can't inspect it, but the election authority can't inspect it. The president of the United States can't inspect it because we don't have the source code or the very foundation of the machine, because that information is locked up in a foreign escrow account somewhere.
Goodness.
So it's not transparent at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So you would obviously have, you know, at the polling place, you would have your election judges, the workers, and then you would have a separate set of people to do counting?
Yes.
Okay.
So in my experience, in April, you know, they still have like 6 or 8 people at the polling location, you know, 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans, or however they split it. I mean, it is even how they split it, but it could be like an independent and Democrat. To be honest, they're kind of, they look bored. There's never been a line in the past, like, 6 years. There hasn't been a line. I think the only line I ever stood in to vote was in 2016, during Donald Trump's first election. But since then, you know, it's just, I could use those people, you know, 2 or 3 of them, well, it would have to be an even number. So 2 or 4 of them could be checking people in, handing them their appropriate ballot, because each precinct has a couple different ballot styles depending on where you live, basically. And you hand them their ballot, and then the other judges that are already assigned there, it could be 4, could be 6, they could be counting the ballots. I would actually need to do 2 teams of 4 for the larger ones. So they would be counting the votes on the ballots as they're, so not as they come in, but like you still stick them in the ballot box, but then, you know, every hour or so, the ballots will be grabbed out of the ballot box and taken to the counting team in that location.
Okay.
So they would all be just doing it there at the polling location, which is how it's described in law to do it.
Right.
When you're hand counting.
Right. Why do you think that this might be a much, much more involved question, but why do you think they switched to the computers in the first, or, you know, to the tabulators in the first place?
Well, we had the hanging chads. I think that was back in 2000 or 2001 down in Florida, that big fiasco. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it created some drama for that presidential election.
Right.
That's possibly why. You know, I remember back in grade school doing the Scantron machines for your tests, and you had that little leaflet that you had to fill out the bubbles or whatever. So I think people honestly did think that it was innocent. It was a way to streamline and help the system be more accurate. But the more we've learned about electronic systems and how vulnerable they are, even the Department of Defense has been hacked. Like, the more we learn about this, especially given the fact that our country doesn't even own these machines that we're using, tabulators or voting machines, most of the time for most jurisdictions. We should believe what we're seeing. We should look into it at least. We should be skeptical. And I think that, because if you go back, it didn't take a week to count our votes when we were counting by hand.
Right.
It was election day. We had election day. And the votes were tallied and reported on election day. Mm-hmm. We're not reinventing a wheel. It's not going to take a week, a month, a year, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Georgia's still counting their votes. But I think people have just gotten so used to the technology that they're desensitized to all the real underlying issues that are there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, that. And also the fact of, like, we do live in such an instant gratification society now that any thought of doing things not through technology seems like it's going to take forever. I mean, that's just kind of the mindset that I feel like a lot of people probably have. But yeah, again, I mean, I just think if people actually knew what the process was, they, like you said, when you explain it to them, they become in favor of it. So I think that's really good.
I've also I've actually been gaining more campaign material as we go on throughout this, because I went to it was a demonstration by the Franklin County Clerk and People's Lobby Missouri in Washington back in December, and they used the same machines, the tabulators that we use here in St. Charles County. And they put a bunch of ballots through the machine, and the clerk and a few of his election workers were absolutely 100% convinced that those tabulators would absolutely recognize and spit back out your ballot if there was a voter intent issue.
Okay.
And like they were just like, no, it'll spit it back out. Don't worry. And when we put the when the People's Lobby put the ballots in the machine, it didn't spit them back out.
And sorry, and you said voter's intent.
Voter intent. So under state statute 115.456 and 15 CSR 30-9.030, it shows you, even has illustrations how you can vote on a paper ballot, which mm-hmm. is our official ballot in the mm-hmm. state of Missouri. You can circle a name. You could put a star next to a name. You can circle two names and then X one out and draw an arrow and say this one. To tell the people that are counting your votes that you didn't mean to circle Biden and Trump. You really just wanted Trump. So you mm-hmm. put that arrow and say this one. Those are all legally cast votes.
Okay.
That should be determined by a counting team, which would be two Republicans, two Democrats, or even one Republican, one Democrat. They have to decide what was the voter's intent on this choice right here. A machine is incapable of doing that. A tabulator. Mm. So when they put all those ballots in there, every single voter intent issue, I'll call it that, on those ballots was counted as an undervote. So basically it was not counted. And the machine did not tell you that it wasn't going to count it. It didn't spit your ballot back out and say, you need to fix this. It just simply didn't count it. So I look at our April elections, and I was actually looking at them prior to going to this demonstration, and there's a massive number of undervotes, almost as many undervotes as there are votes cast for school board elections.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, could this possibly be a voter intent issue? Because the tabulators don't catch this, and the voter is never going to know.
Right.
Their vote wasn't even counted. So that, to me, is a huge issue.
Absolutely.
And when I explain that to the voters when I'm campaigning out here, that blows their mind, because they're probably thinking back, I may have done that once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. And I'm curious, do you ever run into people when you're campaigning that are like, oh, I don't vote. I don't care.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
vote. Yeah.
Yep. All the time.
What do you say to them? Do you just kind of leave it, or do you try and have a conversation?
Well, it actually happened more so when I was running for school board and when I was campaigning for my other school board counterparts. And their thing was, oh, I don't have kids in school. So I would always just say, you know, school districts take a vast majority of your personal property taxes. I was like, so you have a vested interest in how our schools are run because you're paying for it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, here's the information on our candidates. I really hope that you decide to show up in April, you know, that kind of thing. And a lot of them are just, they never even think of it like that. Mm-hmm. They're not even like, they didn't consider it. So I see the light bulbs go off sometimes. Other times they're just like, yeah, we just don't care. So I do try and encourage, you know, them to, I guess, get more involved or at least come show up to, research the candidates and then show up on election day. You know, do whatever you vote, however you want to vote. It's your right.
Right.
But I don't apply a whole lot of pressure when I'm campaigning, because again, I'm trying to get people to show up for candidates that I support.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to kind of alienate anybody or make them feel bad for not doing their civic duty.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So your election is in August.
Yes,
okay.
August 4th.
Because it is partisan.
It is partisan. I'm registered as a Republican. I've been registered as a Republican since I started voting. And it's on the Republican primary ballot. So you'll have, I think there's like a Constitution ballot, an independent ballot. Maybe there's a Green Party ballot, a Democrat ballot. So you'd have to pull a Republican ballot to vote for me.
Okay. And you know for sure, obviously, that Kurt Bauer is running again?
Yes.
Okay, so he
is
will
my
obviously...
Republican opponent.
Okay, and are there any others that you know of?
I think an independent, or no, a libertarian.
Okay.
I think signed up on the very last day. I'm not sure what his name is. It's skipped my mind, but he did sign up on the last day of signups.
Yeah. Okay. Do you, how is the campaigning for Kurt going? Like, does it seem like he has quite a bit of money behind him?
That is yet to be known. He was 10,000 in the hole prior to this campaign season, because the year that he didn't have an opponent, he took a bunch of people on a golf outing and spent more than what was in his campaign account. So,
wow.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, especially with no opponent. So he was 10,000 in the hole. I don't know how much he's got now. I'm really trying to not focus on his spending and campaigning,
right?
Just because I don't want to be, not that I would get frightened, but I don't want to be discouraged by, you know, how many zeros he's got in his campaign account.
Sure.
So I've just been focusing on what I've got going on. The last time I did check, though, to be honest, I don't think there was any donations yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
Besides his own self-funding.
Yeah, I didn't know if he had the backing of some of the more wealthy lobbyist types, or if...
Not that I can tell.
Yeah. Well, I hope that it turns out well for you. I know that it's probably hard, I would think. You know, obviously, I mean, you've been knowing, or, you know, you've kind of been like in campaign mode, I would think, for several years. So are you feeling good still, or are you like, are you worn down yet?
No, I'm chomping at the bit. I've just been waiting for the school board election to be over with, because again, I didn't want to take any attention off of that before I started going door to door, but I've been chomping at the bit to get out there and start knocking down doors, not knocking them down, but
right,
you know what I
right.
mean.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely.
Getting out there and spreading the word and getting some signs in yards and just getting the message out there. Because I think when I do get the message out there, it's just going to grow.
Right.
It's going to spread, and we're going to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So does your county have a county clerk also?
No, we have a county recorder, county... Oh, man, that's a good question. We do not have a county clerk, but we have a collector of revenue, a recorder of deeds.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I think those two, maybe not the collector of revenue, I think that'd be under like a treasurer type thing in a different county. But the recorder of deeds would probably be more so like a county clerk.
Okay.
Because their county clerks are typically involved in all the records of the county.
Right.
So they would have the deeds, the marriage certificates, death certificates, all that stuff. Where that's where you'd go for a sunshine request for your county or whatever. So.
Right. So are you in communication with the other county elected seat holders? How do they feel about you and your mission?
Well, given that it's an election year, there the county collector is up for re-election, and I have not gotten involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contested race. I do not support the current collector, and it's basically because of some things that she said when she was testifying in Jeff City in a House committee, or I think it might have been a joint committee, but it was over personal property taxes, and she had said something to the effect of, well, if you don't want to pay high personal property taxes, don't buy expensive things. And I thought to myself, I was like, that is not a Republican position, first of all. So I'm not supporting the incumbent for sure.
Gotcha.
I believe Erica Bridges is running against her, and I will likely be supporting her. And the county council, I have been in contact with them for years. They are, several of them are supporters of mine and are behind what I'm trying to do here.
Good. Good. I'm sure that helps.
County executive race is also contested. I have not met one person who supports the incumbent, so I'm hoping he is going to retire here soon on August 4th. That'd be great.
Yeah. Do you know if you guys would be the first county to switch back to paper ballots in Missouri?
There is one county that hand counts, and I wrote it down. It is way, way, way up north.
Okay. Yeah, I guess paper ballot and hand counting doesn't go hand in hand because, like, my county has paper ballots. So for a long time, I thought that we weren't using the tabulators because other people were talking about, you know, like they vote on a computer, basically, and that's not, you know, that's not how we do it. We do it on a paper, but yeah, obviously that's different. I mean, because you actually count the paper ballots. You don't put it into the machine.
Right. And the county that does it up north is super tiny, and they have never used tabulators, okay. Like ever. So this is just their daily life.
Yeah. I'd be so interested to look at their election results for the past several years and just see, you know, maybe to just interview people up there and see if they feel like everything was accurate. Because, I mean, honestly, even my county, I feel like sometimes things are skewed.
Right. I'm actually looking right now because I have an email in here that tells me what county it was. I can come back to that. Oh, Worth County. Yep.
Worth?
So Worth County up north. W-O-R-T-H.
Okay. I've not heard of that.
I know. I've never heard of it before either.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be really interesting to talk to them and just see how things have gone for them over the years and why they haven't ever switched.
Yep.
Yeah. So people can find you, obviously, on Facebook, and then you have a website?
Yes. On Facebook, I'm at Jen Olson, and that's O-L-S-O-N-S-C-C, as in St. Charles County.
Okay.
My email is olsonforthepeople@gmail.com, and my website is olsonforthepeople.com.
Olson for the People, and it's O-L-S-O-N, correct?
Correct, yep.
Okay. And so obviously people can find you there and, you know, contact you, I'm sure donate to the cause. Yes. Which
especially— I'm also having a mouse race on April 18th. It's called the Gentucky Derby.
Oh, I saw that.
It'll be here in St. Peter's, Missouri, April 18th from 6 to 10 p.m. If you go to my website, Olson for the People, or you just go to my Facebook page, at Jen Olson SCC, you can find out more information on that. It's going to be a great time. I'm encouraging people to dress up in their best Kentucky Derby attire, and we're going to have prizes for best dressed. It's going to be a good time.
That's awesome. I love that. I might have to. When did you say what date it is?
April 18th from 6 to 10 p.m.
April 18th from 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 10.
6 to 10. Sorry. I thought that's what you said. 6 to 10 p.m. And you said St. Peter's.
Yep.
Okay. But they can find
the open bar.
Okay. Well, there you go, people. It's going to be a fun night out. Wear your big hats that you can't ever wear anymore because people don't exactly. Wear them. I always think, you know, I'm like, man, I wish that we could just bring back the hats. You know, every once in a while, I'll wear one. But yeah, I just always feel a little bit odd. And I'm just like, man, I just want to wear a nice big hat.
I have noticed that if you wear them at the beach, it's totally acceptable.
Oh, yes.
You don't get any looks.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Jen, what else would you like people to know about you or about the county or the director of elections or anything?
Basically, my core message is that our elections belong to the people. It was never, ever, ever intended for them to be outsourced to other countries, to foreign philanthropists or whatever. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to always have full control of our own elections. And by returning to hand-counted paper ballots, that's what we're going to do. We're going to give that control back to the people. We're going to keep the funds here in St. Charles County. We are going to bridge the divide between people, your neighbors, your friends, your family, because for the past, you know, 6 years, however long it's been, people have been divided on who actually won the election. You've got, you know, Republicans saying it was rigged 1 year. Democrats are saying it's rigged the next year. And nobody really knows because we can't look into these machines. Mm-hmm. We can't get down to the nuts and bolts of them. So by returning it to the people, by giving them back full transparency, full control of their elections, I think that we are going to restore trust and integrity in our election system, which is it's desperately needed at this point. Because when you don't trust the outcomes of your elections, that's when, you know, things begin to crumble. And we're the greatest country on earth. We have to protect that at the county level, at the state level, as well as nationally.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just curious, are people allowed to just kind of come and hang out at the polling place and watch the counting?
So they would be able to watch the counting process in the area where the counters are counting, kind of the challengers and watchers. So how you get signed up to be challengers and watchers is you go to your local party, whether you're Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, Republican, and you sign up with them and they'll schedule you to be a challenger or watcher at a polling location. I would love for to open up the county election authority where we'll be counting the early ballots. I would love to open that up to everybody. You know, you can come in and watch the counting process happen. My goal eventually is to be able to have cameras set up over the counting tables at every precinct and at the county election authority where the early votes are counted, so that after the polls close, all of that can be uploaded to a website. So anybody anywhere can count the votes of the St. Charles County elections. It doesn't take a machine to do that. You can count them with your own eyes.
Yeah.
So that will also, I think that will also help decrease the questions about who won or, you know, who cast these ballots or are these real ballots, because you'll be able to see them being counted in real time.
Right. Yeah. And I was just thinking too, it'd be cool if it could get to a point where you could even live stream it. And so people could basically just be sitting watching while in real time while it's being counted.
So I think the issue with that would be reporting the votes prior to the closing of polls.
Oh, yep. I could see that.
I did think about that at the beginning. So it was a valid thought there.
Yeah.
But it just, I guess somebody, not the average Joe, would be able to count the entire election. But if you had, you know, every camera or whatever, and you had a team of people, you could know the outcome before it's even reported. So I think that would be the only setback there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it definitely sounds like you are well educated and you've thought this through a lot, and you obviously care about your community. You've been involved for several years now, and I wish you the best of luck. If I was in St. Charles, you would have my vote.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I would like that for our county as well, but we'll take one step at a time.
And hopefully when St. Charles County gets it done and we go to hand counting, I think it's going to be a ripple effect, because a county of our size doing it gives nobody else an excuse to not do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, everyone, again, this is Jen Olson. You can find her on Facebook and website. I'm sorry, you're going to have to say it again for me. Olson for the People.
OlsonForThePeople.com. Yep.
That's right. Yep. So, and join her at the Gentucky Derby. You can find out more information about that on her website and Facebook page. But especially if you're in St. Charles County, definitely get out and vote in the municipal election coming up. And then also, obviously, vote for Jen in August. Any closing thoughts?
If anybody wants to sign up to be a hand counter for our elections, you can also do that on my website. You don't have to be from St. Charles County. So anybody can sign up to do that.
And that, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that's on election day, correct?
Yes, that will be on election day.
Yep. Okay. I mean, I assumed. I just wanted to clarify.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Jen. I enjoyed getting to talk to you and hear more about what's going on there in St. Charles. And again, I wish you the best of luck, and let's talk again soon.
Yes. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Again, that was Jen Olson. It's Olson. and you can find her on Facebook and on her website, Olson for the People. I'm excited to see what happens with that, because like she said, I think especially if a county like St. Charles can switch back to hand counting, then that is just a good step in the right direction for the rest of us around Missouri. And I, like I was saying, you know, when I went to that hand counting demonstration, I really actually enjoyed it. I mean, I would absolutely be a hand counter, just because there is, I just feel like there's a lot more confidence in what's happening. And, you know, it's really ridiculous how long we're waiting for election results currently with the machines. So I really don't want to hear the excuse of, well, it would take too long and blah, blah, blah. No, I really think that people would realize it doesn't take too long and it is much more reliable. And like she was saying, we can keep the money in our county then. You know, we're not sending money off to who knows where with who knows what agenda. I mean, anyway, so, all right, folks. That is it for me today on this Good Friday. Again, I hope that you take some time to reflect this weekend and just really give thanks for serving Jesus Christ that is risen from the dead, alive, and preparing a place for us. Next week, I'm going to have Senator Mike Moon on. I'm looking forward to that. There's always lots going on up at the Capitol, but there's some good movement happening, especially with the personhood amendment, which I talked about quite a bit a couple weeks ago with Dr. Wes Scroggins from Abolish Abortion Missouri. You can find that on my Substack. It was, I believe, 2 weeks ago. And the title is Utilitarian or Biblical. It was very good. So go check that out if you want to hear some more about it. But definitely tune in next week. And remember that if you ever have any questions, you are welcome to send them to me. And I can ask them on air, or you can call while I am on at 573-746-8020. You can find me at Nadine at 9 on Facebook and Substack, as well as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And later today will be JR with a really big show at 2, Search of Solutions with Josh at 4, Eye on Solutions with Josh and Polly at 5:30, and then Eye of the Beholder with Polly at 6:30, and great music all weekend long. Sunday, we celebrate the resurrection, and Monday at 7:30 a.m., Samuel Trapp starts everything off with International Flavor for the Week. So, that's it. I hope that you have, again, a wonderful weekend, and remember, until next time, let's not act like children.